Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Professor Jennifer Curtin this morning. Kia ora, Jennifer. How are you today?
Kia ora, I'm good, thank you.
Let's start local and move international. Let's start local as in the University of Auckland and around the country today. The Tertiary Education Union, there's a strike happening for academic staff. Now, what is going on? How has it got to this point? And what is the strike all about?
Well, as we know, New Zealanders everywhere are experiencing really tough cost of living pressures, right? And so the collective agreements for those who are union members on collective agreements, those are being renegotiated around the country. So each university is doing their own. And there are offers. There's been negotiations going backwards and forwards, not just on pay increases, but on a range of other conditions. And really, basically, we're at a standstill in the sense that the offers that have been made at all eight universities are deemed insufficient by the TEU on behalf of their members. And, you know, members have voted to strike today at all eight universities in some different forms or other. So at the University of Auckland, it's between 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock. Today, and if students are interested in knowing more about it, they can turn up at the rally at 1 o'clock outside the clock tower. But I think the thing here is that, you know, not at the University of Auckland, the pay offer is higher than at some other universities, which are really struggling, you know, 1 or 2%. And so this isn't just about what each individual campus or university is experiencing. I think the strike is also about solidarity across the sector, recognising that not all universities are staff are equally well remunerated, and is that a fair thing given cost of living pressures and the fact that the pay offers are unlikely to meet the CPI increases going forward?
Absolutely. We've talked over the course of the pandemic quite a lot about the impact that the pandemic has had on student well-being. I guess we've talked less about the impact it's had on staff well-being, but that's been a very fundamental pressure that's been going on over the last couple of years. What have been some of your observations about the pressures thrown up by COVID on teaching staff and academic staff at the university?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are differences between types of staff, right? So at the University of Auckland, we had a voluntary leaving scheme, which a good number of staff took up. So they left and weren't replaced. If they were replaced with precarious or very short-term contract people. And this has been an ongoing challenge for the sector, that they precarious employment within the sector is horrifyingly high. And quite poorly paid, and the access to the kinds of conditions are different to permanent academic staff. So in that sense, it's professional staff are also covered by the agreement that's under consideration.
Mm-hmm.
So they've had to really pick up lots of extra administration and professional work in academics, the shift to online teaching, but also the duty of care that's required. You know, we don't shy away from it at all, but it has meant that the intensity and the amount of hours that have been given to the sector over the last 2.5 to 3 years has been quite extraordinary. And I think, you know, at the University of Auckland, those who go on strike are having their pay docked today for 4 hours. We're being suspended if we strike, and then we lose 4 hours of pay. And I think the outpouring of social media posts and emails that are going around indicate that is being interpreted as quite mean, given the extra work that has been picked up by professional and academic staff and short-term contract staff over the past 2 to 3 years.
Well, big solidarity with everyone striking today. Let's talk about the local government, because it's the last couple of days people can vote. Speaking of the University of Auckland, there's going to be a one-stop shop voting space set up in the quad today. So if people have not got their voting papers or they haven't sent their voting papers off, you can come and do it all on campus today. So that's really great to see. It's a pretty dire turnout across the country, though. Just looking at Auckland, I think we're slightly down, 16.7% compared to 17% last time, but the regions are looking pretty grim. And there's been a lot of anecdotal evidence about people not receiving voting papers. Nanaia Mahuta, the local government minister, hasn't received her papers. That's a pretty bad look. What do you think have been some of the major barriers to getting people into the polling booths, or the posting booths, I guess, in this case?
Yeah, this is really complex this time around, I think. I mean, we know low turnout happens for a range of reasons, but it is about how one of the drivers of turnout is about how passionate people are feeling about the issues on the table, and how much they feel inspired or by an election, or how close an election is. There are sort of particular things that incite people or encourage people to vote that are exogenous to the voting process. But really, I mean, there's been real challenges with New Zealand Post. They don't have enough workers to cope, they argue, with the way in which postal voting works. We know that we only get deliveries every second day. They only get picked up every second day. In Auckland, we've been told you shouldn't post your vote papers back after Tuesday. That's like 4 days before it closes. So lots of people, I think, would have still dropped their papers off yesterday in a post box, and they won't be counted. So there's that. And we also know that there is a socio-economic dimension to turnout. So the high, we're seeing higher turnout so far, or return of papers so far, from areas that are more affluent. Whereas those who are less well off and really busy people and are less likely to feel engaged, to feel represented, or to feel that their voice even matters. So this low turnout, I mean, we've had poor turnout for a long time at local government. So I think a review of everything to do with this election, because postal voting in itself is not necessarily a real problem. In the UK in the 2019 general election, postal voting was really high amongst people who have disabilities, who find it difficult to get out. But with an absence of post boxes, who knows where their post boxes, right? It's a real challenge. And for democracy's sake, it would be really good if Nanaia Mahuta took the call and said, we need to review what's going on.
Absolutely. Well, for people who haven't posted their vote or maybe didn't even enrol in time, the one-stop shop on the University of Auckland campus is going to be at the quad from 11 a.m. till 3 p.m. today. You can come and do all of it. You can enrol, you can send your votes off, and just come on down. It's going to be nice. You can come up and say hi to us at BFM as well while you're there. Very briefly, let's just talk about what's happening in Brazil, because it's pretty, tense over there at the moment. They're in the process of their election. What is the state of play as it's lying at the moment?
Yeah, I suppose why I wanted to just mention this is because we're seeing the populist right rising in Italy. I know you talked about that last week. There are elections coming up throughout Europe, but we sometimes overlook Latin America, and we know the Chilean progressive constitution wasn't passed. But with Brazil, Bolsonaro is very Trumpian. He governed through the pandemic and called it a little flu. And he was expected to be well behind in the first runoff for president. And he's only 5 percentage points behind the left-wing candidate, Lula, who used to be president. And so there's some real concerns that... So he's really pro-mining. He's really not looking after the Amazon. He just doesn't really care that much about poverty and so on, and very Trump-like. And so his party's won a heap of extra seats. So have two trans candidates and two indigenous candidates, so they're now being elected as well. So for the left, there's a little spark of hope that there's going to be another presidential runoff election on the 30th of October, and Lula will be hoping to win that. But if it's not a really, if it's a close call, then there's some real challenges for Brazil with having a really hard right populist president.
Yeah.
Again, for another 4 years, yeah.
Well, we'll definitely come back and have a look at that closer to the runoff. But thank you very much for your time today, Professor Jennifer Curtin. Solidarity once again, and we'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
If you are